I think if we can open the aperture on, like, where will I find inspiration and draw from? It's everywhere. It can be nature. It can be a book. It can be study. It can be an online course. It's not just that thing.
Welcome to The Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave us a review, comment, and share it with your fellow manifester that's struggling or could really benefit from the information that you're about to learn. Yeah, so I actually want to touch on this. Anyone who's out there listening to the podcast and hasn't done the work inside the pathway yet, it's comprised of all of the workshops that I teach. So one of them that's completely, I believe, mandatory for every manifester is called Unblocked Reparent, which this particular magnetic person was speaking about. Another one is Shadow. And then, of course, one of the most important ones is the Formula Magnetism workshop, which actually teaches you how to manifest, amongst other great workshops in there. Reparent to me is huge. It's the one, aside from Shadow, that I revisit the most. And why it's so important is because even the way that we're manifesting, it's from our subconscious belief. So it's not our thoughts. And it's the imprintation we picked up in childhood from 0 to 14, if I'm being generous. And obviously we continue to pick up new imprintation throughout our lives, especially the more traumatic experiences. And so why this is so powerful is because we're addressing every single stage of our childhood pre-utero to 25 in it. And we're going through and we're addressing the most important aspects of us to manifest. So I love that she touched on purpose and how profound that was into, at this point in her life, guiding her purpose and really putting everything together. And at the end of the day, anybody who is conflicted about why they're not manifesting, I think this is the most important thing to talk about. If we're not manifesting, there's only two things that could be going on. One, we're not expanded enough. So we haven't seen to believe through enough expanders that what we want is possible, that we identify with them. They come from, you know, similar backgrounds or similar limiting beliefs and have overcome them to accomplish what they want. When we see enough of those, we therefore are expanded enough to create space in our subconscious for what we want to come through. So that's one aspect if somebody's not manifesting. The second is if they aren't unblocked enough. And there are two really prominent aspects of blocks to be working through, which are shadow and that reparenting process of what we picked up. So anywhere in childhood that we picked up, we were worthy and we got a lot of praise and we were all of the things society accepted. Those are the things that we manifest very easily, especially if we had expanders around us who do those things. Where we're not manifesting is where we experience pain and shame. So every block stems from shame, every single one. When you do the root work and the journaling and get back down to it, at the very bottom, there's a sense of shame. So that's why reparent is really, really profound. And the only other thing that could be blocking our manifestations is if we're settling. So if we have things blocking us or standing in front of us and we're settling. And I think the last episode of Supported that just came out, and of course, anybody who's inside the pathway is automatically subscribed to Supported, which is my class that I teach twice a month, that's an hour long, and I answer everybody's manifestation questions. And we really touched on that a lot. So if you haven't been in to check out Supported, if you're still trying to manifest and you haven't done Unblocked Reparent, go do them. Because that's half the reason why you're not manifesting. The only other half could be you're not expanded enough. So enjoy this episode. Today's episode is with my own personal Vedic meditation teacher, Jack Lewis, from The Broad Place in Australia. She happened to reach out when she was coming to LA I want to say 4 years ago, because Max and I did it together. And I had heard about TM a little bit and Vedic meditation a little bit, but I didn't really get it or understand it. And so when I went to her training, it was profoundly life-changing for me. You guys always see me posting about my practice. You hear everybody on here talking about the fact that they do TM or they do Vedic meditation. And don't worry, she explains it more in depth in this episode if you're like, the what? Who? Huh? So it's the practice that I do twice a day, 20 minutes a day. And it's totally, totally shifted my reality. My life has gotten so much better since I started doing it. And it's been a huge influence in how I digest the world and how I also have gone much deeper into Vedic living, Ayurveda. So I really am excited for you guys to meet her, to hear her. What I love about her most is she's so grounded and she's created a whole new system around Vedic meditation to make it fully integrated. So it's for the modern busy person of how to take this one practice and adjust it to your modern lifestyle. And I love her for that because a lot of people that you'll find in the Vedic world are very ritualistic, diligent. They stay by the book. And that's why she spoke to me so deeply, is because she gave me permission to use this ancient, incredible modality and put it into my life that's really fast-paced and modern. So enjoy this episode. Welcome back to the Expanded Podcast. We are here today with my Vedic meditation teacher, which many of you guys know. I feel like there's not much introduction needed. Jackie Lewis, but I call her Jack, and most of her students do as well. Based out of Australia, but a really cool new, which I think will be very expansive, move is in the way that you manifested. So we have to get into that. Let's kick it off where I kick it off with everybody. Give us your cultural background and upbringing.
Cultural background is Aussie, Aussie, Aussie the whole way through. So both my parents are Australian and we grew up in the Northern Beaches in Sydney. Lived there. Yeah, my brother and I lived there or have lived there our whole lives. And Sydney is, for anyone that hasn't been, it's so aesthetically beautiful. It's lots of nature and the beaches. It's a very safe place. It can feel a bit small sometimes. I think everyone always laughs, like Australians are such travelers. We always love getting out of Australia. And I think that's in part due to wanting to explore. We're like so far down right down the bottom. And it's a place that it's beautiful to be for a while and to get your footing. And then everyone seems to spit their way out for a while. Sometimes come back, but most of the time, there's a lot of us abroad.
Yeah, everybody's transient I've ever met. All the Aussies that I know.
And we travel for long periods of time.
Wow, I know. You guys really do. You make an effort out of it.
Yeah.
What about your parents? What were their jobs growing up?
So my mom had me at 21. So she had me very, very young and then raised me, but then also my brother. My brother's disabled. So he was born 3 years after me. So my mom was like literally had just turned 24. Yeah. And a disabled child becomes everything. Yeah. My dad has always been a chef. Interestingly, he became a chef because he wanted to surf. Mm. And it was a job that he could do at night and then surf by day, mm-hmm. which enabled him to follow. That was his passion. And his brother then decided, oh God, you know, that looks like a really cool thing to do. I'll do the same. And they went on to become two of Australia's best chefs.
So, wow. Yeah, because they're quite famous and known,
yeah,
right?
Very, very. At the time, he's been retired for 4 years. But yeah, we won Best Restaurant of the Year. He won Chef of the Year. And that's throughout Australia as well as in New South Wales, and which is the state that Sydney's in. And same for his brother. So it was interesting because he didn't come from a background where, you know, being a chef was a thing. And mm-hmm. it wasn't like a career thing. He wasn't mm-hmm. like, oh, I just have a passion for food. it was a path for him to be able to do his hobby.
Wow. Mm. And what disabilities did your brother have?
He's got spina bifida.
And to explain that to me, I'm not familiar with it.
So spina bifida is essentially where the brain isn't communicating to the base of the spine. Oh. So it has varying degrees. Matt's really lucky that he only has physical disability. A lot of the time it can be mental as well. And he can't walk properly. So when he was, I still remember the day he was born and we were told that he wouldn't live through the day. And then we were told he wouldn't live a week. And it was this ongoing, like he won't live a month, he won't live the year. He'll never walk, he'll never talk, he'll never be able to communicate properly. And he's the most determined individual I've ever met. And he just continued to push through and push through and push through. And now he lives independently. He studies and he works.
Incredible.
He's a remarkable, remarkable person.
What an
person.
Expander.
Yeah, big time.
And how did your mom and dad process that? And how did that look for you growing up?
It's really interesting because for me, you know, it's all you know. So I didn't have anything to compare it to. We spent a lot of time in hospital. I was also a really sick kid. So I got asthma the same year that my brother was born, really badly, chronic pneumonias and collapsed lungs. And I spent a ton of time in hospital. And now I look back on it and I think, you know, there were some days where my dad was working so hard, you know, 16, 18 hours a day. And my mum would have to travel between two hospitals on different sides of Sydney to visit my brother and then to come and visit me. So I'd only have her for like half an hour. Pardon me. We calibrated to that as a family. It was just, we were sort of all quite independent and had to be doing our thing. Also a lot of, I was just super grateful. I felt like I got all the experiences and all the opportunities that my brother didn't. So I was really athletic and very creative. I had time and space to explore things, whereas my brother didn't. And I think there was a gratitude that came with that. You sort of become hyper aware of, oh, I can just walk over there if I need something. And I can just walk down the stairs and I don't need to, I can bathe myself. You know, just little things that you go, that you take for granted until, you know, you have to. Until they're taken away, until you're really confronted with them, you don't really understand that it's a thing.
Absolutely, the privilege of it.
Yeah, and even today, you know, Aaron's one of our best friends, but particularly Aaron's became a quadriplegic 5 years ago from the neck down as a single dad in his late 30s. And so it was super confronting. But you would assume, like after my brother having been through everything he's been through, and then we were very close with our friend Chance and seeing that, you kind of go, you have these moments where you're like, I'm never going to take walking for granted again, or I'm never going to take going to the toilet on my own again. And then you forget. And you do. You just constantly forget. So
yeah,
I think growing up with it has been a, it's taught me to keep remembering to be grateful because I have to remind myself.
It's true. It's absolutely true. And I think there's something to be said from this manifestation community that we are always wanting for more. There is something really important about that, taking that moment to be incredibly grateful for all that we have. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's something that's thrown around in the wellness world and the spiritual world, but how much of us are really taking that into account often?
And doing it is a, I think the things that I learned to do were things like the gift of being able to write, like watching my brother learn to write and just little things that you go, oh, that would be so, that, you know, we don't think about it. You know, I can write without or type without looking at anything. And that is, it's a miracle. Like you watch your own little kid learning, like watching my daughter learn how to write. Like this is actually one of the most complicated cognitive functions. Drinking, you know, like lifting a glass to your mouth and being able to just drink without spilling it everywhere. Those kind of things, they're the things that I find if I'm having a really like a shitty day, I come back to what can I do literally here and now in this moment. And it's not things, I try not to use things like, oh, you know, I've got my beautiful family and, you know, I try to get really, really basic.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really fundamental. Yeah, yeah. I can walk from here to here. I can go to the bathroom on my own. I can I can drink water without spilling all over myself. I can eat a meal. I can cook a meal. You know, those, and they're not available to everybody. So
how do you think growing up in that environment, especially you, and we have to talk about how you overcame your asthma at some point too, we'll drop in here, but how do you think it played into what you do now? Because, well, first before that, give us your trajectory of work, because I think it's a really interesting non-linear trajectory, and then we can end up into meditation, then I'll start to add.
Okay, so what was interesting was about a couple of months ago, my mom said to me, oh, it's so funny that now you're a teacher because you're always destined to be a teacher. I was like, "What? No, it wasn't. Like, I was never destined to be a teacher." And she's like, yeah, you were. I remember you used to teach your brother. And one of the things that happened when I was little was my brother, because I was so worried about him being behind in school and my parents insisted on him going to a non-special school and going to just a regular public school. And we were, there was a lot of tension around that. So I used to sit and teach him every day.
Oh, wow. The Virgo.
Manic. But I would come home from school, also bossy. I'd come home from school, I'd make him sit down with a blackboard and with chalk. And
I would
teach him every single thing I learned that day.
Wow.
And I loved this. But obviously his attention span was, he was three. And so I would condense everything. And I still remember loving, how do I take this huge, vast amount of information and condense it into something digestible and easy to understand? For me, the distillation process was really interesting. And then I forgot all about all that. And then I finished school and became an interior architect and studied furniture design and graphics. And I loved working in creative industries. I then worked out I was actually better at communicating them more so than I was, because I loved talking and sharing. And one of my, I think my little, you know, you have those like weird skills that don't really mean anything.
Totally.
But they sort of are there. I don't know.
Mine all turned into what I do now. I never had pieced together. They were all such weird little, like, seeing patterns and just weird little skills that meant nothing.
Yeah, that you don't until you sort of go, oh, that's that thing I do on the side. But connecting pieces of information or people together has always been one of my great joys. Mm-hmm. And so when I could take all the creative industries and then connect those designers and artists and architects with, say, for example, the media or their demographic or their audience, that's when I was like, oh, this is where I understand all the language and I understand also from a media perspective or from an audience perspective what they might be looking for. And that sort of led me down a path into doing marketing and advertising and public relations and graphic design. So Aaron and I formed an agency together. Mm-hmm. But it was sort of, it was this long, I've had homewares, a beautiful homewares brand that I started with a girlfriend, and I've been self-employed since I was 21.
Wow, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, which is
tell us about that, because that's very expansive for people who are sitting there in their corporate job or they're in school and they may be studying something they don't want to be doing, that freedom of being an entrepreneur.
Just to sidebar that, so I wouldn't say I'm an entrepreneur because something that someone said to me, which was one of those like light bulb moments, whereas he said, so tell me about your business. And I started talking about the things that I did. And he's like, right, so that's not your business. That's the things that you love. Tell me about your business. And I got really stuck. And he's like, oh, you're self-employed.
Wow.
And
okay.
He's a big executive coach. And I was like, but what do you mean? He's like, oh, it's just, I don't know if you consider yourself an entrepreneur. And I was like, well, no, I don't. And he's like, good, because you're not one.
And what were the qualifications to him to be one?
He said that to be an entrepreneur, you need to be in the business of business. Mm-hmm. And when you're self-employed, you're doing the thing that you love. Mm-hmm. And you've turned it into a business.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And I was like, oh, that's actually a really handy definer. Because I've, for better or for worse, never created any businesses thinking, oh, what will the outset be? Mm. How will I grow and sell this? Or what will... It's never been a target.
That I'm self-employed. Yeah.
Yeah, I've just been self-employed. And I think that when I met Aaron, he was the same as well. Mm-hmm. So we've had between us, we can't remember if it's 14 or 15. We're trying to work it out yesterday, but how many businesses we've had independently. And it's never been because it's like, oh God, like we'll grow this globally and then we'll be able to, you know, franchise it or break it into little pieces. It's always come from, and it's not a wise business decision always, but it's always come from a place of we truly, truly believe in this.
I believe that from a manifestation level, those are the most successful.
Mm. Yeah. No, it's just been the way I've been raised as well, because my dad has absolutely, like, art and creative industries are his passion. Mm-hmm. And the idea of being of service and being able to serve, which is something that I learned through hospitality, was also a big part of it. And he's always been very anti-fame, anti-celebrity. And so, you know, and just doing the things that you love.
Yeah.
And that has just really been pushed into me.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I think my mom missed out on a lot of that as well because of having to care for my brother and I. And so she didn't really have the opportunity to follow her passions.
Does she now?
She does now, yeah. She writes quite a bit. She's a beautiful writer.
Wow.
She's one of the most philosophical. She's been on her own. She's always been deeply spiritual and she's been on her own really big journey, particularly in the last couple of years. But I would say for the last 20 years, she's a real force. And she's always, always like impregnated in me that you can do anything. You can be anyone. You just go for it. Like there's never been a marker of like, oh, like she's never ever, I've never had any, I've come up with the craziest ideas and she's like, that sounds fantastic.
Oh, I love like, her. Oh, incredible. Yeah. What's her sign?
She is a Sagittarius.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
And your dad, what is
Gemini.
He? Oh, wow. And your brother, what's he?
My brother is not Virgo. Oh my God, I've just forgotten. What's the one after Virgo?
Right, after Leo.
Yeah. No, Leo's before.
Oh, what's Leo, his Virgo, and
September
then Libra.
26th. Libra, that's
oh,
it.
So you're the wacky Virgo out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Everyone else is air and fire. That's awesome.
Yep.
And we don't know her exact human design, but I predict that it's a manifesting generator. Remember, we tried to find it sitting at the table that one night. We were having dinner at what is it called? In Topanga, 7th Ray. And you're like, the triple osmosis filtered water. Yeah. So LA.
Twice reversed, didn't you need?
Well, I want to pivot into something really exciting and then we'll get back to career. But tell us about, I don't know if you're talking about it, but you did just manifest something huge and it was so in flow, this move to London out of nowhere. Tell us about that. It's so expansive, I think, for people to really hear the the whole journey?
So we are actually, you know what I'll do? I'll close off on.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had the creative agency and then, because that leads into this.
Great.
So we had our creative agency and that was like the thing that I was, this is what I'm born to do. I'm here to communicate brands and businesses and help them do that. And I loved like working out the brand values and working out how this brand represented itself authentically with integrity and was aligned to its audience. And how could that brand then be of service? Even though I was looking after luxury and high-end boutique brands. And then when we launched Broad Place, which is a school for creativity and consciousness and clarity and for helping people elevate and enhance themselves through those three pillars, I realized it was the same thing, but I was just helping the people rather than the brand mm-hmm. do the same things. And so that started 5.5, 6 years ago, the Broad Place, and it's taken us everywhere. Mm-hmm. We've traveled. It's been a remarkable journey. We've traveled all over the world to teach and to share meditation and things like that. And how London came about was one of our students that were from Australia, but then now they live in London. They learned with me in Palm Beach and they were like, you should come to London. And I've learned over the years when you have those, when people, and London is like, there's no further point, I swear.
So yeah, it's a
30-hour trip. And Aaron used to live there and he'd been talking. He's like, oh, I really want to go back to London. And, you know, it's one of his favorite places to live. And I'd never been, even though I lived in Europe. And
wait, you had never been since this last trip?
No, since 18 months ago when we went.
Okay, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I lived in Spain and Italy and it was never too expensive at the time.
Totally.
Because I was in like 24, 25. Yeah. And then, so we went 18 months ago. And we went, of course, and we landed on like the most idyllic, beautiful day. Yeah. I was like, what's everyone bitching about London weather for?
It's
I was
so
like,
beautiful.
And the Notting Hill Festival, or some like flower festival
wow.
on. So it's like people in the streets drinking rosé, all dressed up. And I was like, London's rad.
Yeah.
Aaron was like, yeah, let's just see you in Shoreditch in
winter.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then we went and we taught. It was just one of these beautiful synchronistic trips. And all of our students there have just been so remarkable.
You met Kelly at that one.
No, I taught her in LA.
Oh, you taught her in LA.
I taught her in LA.
Whoa.
And then I think around the same time you learned. But I just gave her advanced mantra when we were there just
you
now.
You did? I can't wait to get into all that because I have stuff to ask you. But go ahead.
And so we went. We absolutely loved it. And then we just kept going back every 6 months. And then we were there just now in winter. And we've got the life that we live now is like honestly on paper so idyllic. Yeah. Like it's... We live in Palm Beach. We created this incredible, we've got this beautiful house. It's surrounded by trees. It's a 2-minute walk to the water. Everything about it is just so remarkable. And 6 months ago, I said to Aaron, I was like, what's with you? Like, you seem a little, I don't know, I can't put my finger on it. And Aaron's like, Max, like, he's like a rock. Mm-hmm. You know, he's very stable and steady and even mm-hmm. and... you know, I'm like the opposite. I'm flighty,
and
spontaneous, and prone to like bursting into tears and getting overexcited and falling in a heap. And so I said to him, I said, "What's with you?" Because he doesn't normally feel weird about
bluesy.
Things. Yeah. And I said, "Are you depressed?" And he was like, "No. Why would I be depressed? I have literally an idyllic life, and we've created it from the ground up. This is exactly what I want." I was like, "Oh, you're bored." You're bored with it being too beautiful
too
and idyllic.
Great.
And I know that sounds batshit crazy. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you created the perfect life and arrogant. You created this perfect life and now you're bored with it. But I think there's something to be said.
I do too. Because humans need to be in pursuit.
Yeah. And I also think that you're calibrated in a particular way. And Aaron and I have always been calibrated to challenges and to grit and to pushing and learning and expanding. And then there was stagnancy in the beauty and the...
I always have that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when we were there in January, which was 7 weeks ago, our friend sat us down and was like, oh, you know, we think we've been thinking about this and we think you guys should move here. And you know, when you sort of like laugh it off like, oh.
Yeah. I've had so many of those conversations.
Yeah. You're like, you know, because also when you're somewhere for a couple of weeks or a month, and I say this everywhere we are. I'm like, I love this place. I could live here.
Poor Max. We get in a fight every time. I'm like, I'm staying and getting a place. You can go back to California.
Yeah. Not everywhere. I'm like, we should start a commune in Ojai. And then I'm like, we need to move to LA. And then I think we should move over here. And we should spend a year in Tokyo. And it always keeps moving. So January came about. And within 3 days, I sort of threw it up to the... I say calling it in, which I guess is manifestation. I was like, all right, if the universe wants this, it's going to have to call it in. Because we just didn't have... We've got so much... going on at the moment with trips and retreats. And we're publishing a book with Timson Hudson. And Molly started her first year of high school, and all of a sudden moving to across the other side of the earth in a couple of months just seemed like insanity.
Yeah.
And it all just fell into place.
Crazy. Such a flow.
Yeah. And I love testing.
Yeah.
You know, there's like, I really love
pushing.
Yeah, pushing and bordering on sometimes. Like I had a moment when we were in London. I'm like, okay, now I'm just being arrogant because we met with the landlord of the place that we were going to move into, which is heaven. And we got it. Like it just happened like that. Mm. And it was all through friends recommending it. And it was so, and you know, we're talking in 72 hours, got Molly into school, found a place, and you know, Aaron got a new client and all these are my, it was just ridiculous.
Totally.
So I started really pushing. And she said to me, is there anything about the, you know, the place, the apartment? And I was like, well, I'm just worried about where would we put our bikes, you know, because we don't have a garden. And she was like, I'm going to build you a bike shed.
Stop it.
And it was at that moment that I was like, all right, I've got to stop being so, like, I'm really testing now and I need to. And
look at that flow. That's so wild.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Wow. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thanks. Well, it's something I always find hard. There's two, you know, the support of nature and the support of the universe, and it's going to be there and provide you with flow. But then also sometimes it's also testing you, mm-hmm. and it wants you to push through. And that I find a constant having to come back to your heart and work out, is this a push or a test, or is this something that's meant to be happening?
Totally.
But this was just an undeniable.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It just had to happen.
To me, I read it as you guys had been building up magnetism, and the moment that you were willing to jump off that cliff that you guys really wanted to do, which it just creates so much magnetism, and it totally supported you. It's incredible.
Yeah, it was remarkable. And like, honestly, the beautiful students that we had in London, like the phone calls I had to have around the panic, like where do we put Molly into school? It's different, you know, with having a kid, because you, if it was just Aaron and I, we would just go for it.
Yeah, of course.
And then you're like, ooh, and all those things. And obviously our dogs, who are our other babies, but making it all happen and making sure that it was still in alignment with what we wanted.
That's the key. Wow.
That was the hard thing, was I didn't want to move us to the other end of the earth. And it's such a jarring move.
Yeah.
And not have it the way we would love it to
exactly.
be. So we just kept putting it out there and it just kept happening and people kept supporting us. Which,
can't wait to see what's on the other side.
We do.
So excited. When do you guys actually officially land?
In a month.
Wow. So April.
Mm.
Wow. Spring. Literally new year, new start.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's pivot into manifestation, meditation. How did you embark on that? How did that come about for you? Going from brand strategist to in the creative agency, if I could speak today, into becoming a Vedic meditation teacher.
I started meditating when I was a little kid as an escape mechanism. And it was, I look back on it now and it's kind of odd. I was an odd, like really weird child.
No.
Mm. quite obsessive, like very, and very, I didn't view it as lonely necessarily, but I was a strange child. Spent a lot of time on my own. And because of the situation with my brother, I had a lot of freedom. So I could do whatever I wanted. And one of the things was I would go and meditate, but I didn't know what I was doing. So I would go and sit out on the cliffs near the beach, or I would sit in, we had lots of beautiful nature reserve, and I would sit there for hours and just listen to nature or close my eyes, and I could access this place.
Oh, wow.
But I didn't have any framework or education around what I was doing, but it just felt so right. And it was my escape mechanism. And then when I was 18, and then I stopped doing it from about the age of 10. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 18, I started going to yoga, which was super, I mean, we're talking 20 years ago in Australia, in the Northern Beaches. It was a very weird thing to do. And the teacher started just like guiding us through a meditation and doing breath meditation. And I was like, oh, this is that thing I did when I was little.
Wow.
And it was like coming home. It was the weirdest experience.
I love that.
Yeah, it was really, really powerful. And it's taught me that some things are just going to be no matter what, and some things you need to be introduced to. But I also really think those things that, all those little markers when we're little, and we don't necessarily give them enough credence or pay attention to them. You know, it's like that nature was trying to show stuff to us when we were little.
Gifts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then when I was 18, I started, not like informally studying, but I loved doing it. And then I started reading avidly and studying Buddhism and Taoism and Zen, really leaning into Taoism and really leaning into Buddhism. And I was on and off. I tried everything. And I just couldn't find something that 100% clicked. Mm-hmm. They worked to a degree. And I feel like they were like little breadcrumbs taking me down a path. But then when Molly had just been born, so she was a little bubba, and I was struggling severely. Like it was still some of the darkest days of my life. My husband, ex-husband and I was really struggling together. Marley was a surprise. I was told I could never have kids.
Whoa.
And I was really happy with that. Mm-hmm. And then Marley, I fell pregnant. And so Marley was a surprise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just launched a new design agency. We were doing all sorts of incredible things. I just wasn't ready to at that time.
Totally.
I was 25 to have a kid. And so after she was born, that was, it's such a weird thing. Like who you think, all the identity that you created for yourself goes, and it's like having a little mirror. So all the stuff I hadn't dealt with was just all of a sudden shining right in my face at all times. I had really bad postnatal depression. Our marriage was dissolving and I was so stressed. I did a stress test with a friend of mine who studies neuroscience and does all these different modalities. And he was like, I came in at a 9 and it went up to a 10 on the stress odometer and I just hovered there. And he was like, your body's lost the ability to get out of fight flight.
Wow.
And he's like, you need to do something really drastic.
Oh, thank God. Yeah. You found that. Yeah.
Yeah. He was great. And he said, you know, you shouldn't force anyone to do this. And at the time I'd been resisting this for 2 years. I had so many friends that learned, they're all like,
TM or this or that.
It's the best. You've got to do it. And I couldn't quite reconcile. It's like, why is it so expensive to learn?
Yeah.
And I'm paying like $20 a class down at my local Buddhist center and going nowhere. So, but I still couldn't.
I think that's most people's resistance. Yeah. Totally.
And the irony being, and I've had so many students say the same to me, it's like, oh, now that I know what I got out of it, I would have paid double. And I'm like, what would you, if I could give you $1 million, would you stop? And they're like, no.
Everyone says no, yeah.
But that resistance to me was huge. So it's been a gift because I think that experience, it helps me understand where other students are at now.
Absolutely.
As a teacher. And it's a real impressive thing. Like, why do we exchange money for something that we deem should be free? And you're not paying for meditation, you're paying for the teacher's time and education.
1000%. And I think in everybody here listening who's ever done opulence, the exchange of money is very important for everything in life. It's energy, you know.
It's another form of energy. Yeah. And also transaction does result in transformation.
1000%. You actually do the work.
Because you're like, and I've got so many students who, and this was it for me. It's like, oh, I'm just meditating to spite myself.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just do it because it's worth.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this regardless. Yeah. And then once you've got the habit up, it's not such a problem.
Totally.
You know, you don't think about it anymore. But so I learned and something happened. It just, all of a sudden things made perfect sense. And I found I wasn't forcing myself necessarily to meditate. I wanted to do it. I was having interesting experiences. But again, it was like, for me, it was slow and gradual. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that concerns me about meditation in general is being sold as this like silver bullet.
Mm-hmm.
You just do this thing and that's it.
Yeah.
And it's one piece of many pieces in a puzzle.
Yeah. A very big piece, but yes.
A huge piece.
Yeah.
I feel it's such a big piece because if you're not allowing the mind to associate with something other than its thoughts and what it knows every single day and what it does when you meditate with this technique is it transcends beyond that thinking mind, then your mind is just on this continual loop of what it knows. Most of our thoughts are recycled from the day before. Most of our thoughts are egocentric. They're about ourselves.
Or like protecting us from hurting again or fear or this or
completely,
that.
Completely. Keeping the ego safe. Yeah, the ego wants everything to be as small as possible. And so that, I think that dipping and diving is incredibly important, but also the body's holding on to so much on cellular matter. So in the cells, in Sanskrit, they call them samskaras, and they're like these little grooves in the nervous system. And the shortcut would be calling them emotional baggage, but it's like cellular memory of all of our experiences. And until we have a technique that cleanses the nervous system of those, I call it when you meditate, it's like rinsing the body out.
Absolutely.
You're kind of still working with the same clay. It's like, I want to work with metal, but I'm stuck with clay.
Yeah.
So you need to, you know, help change the cellular system. So that's why I think it's transformational. But in the beginning, that took a while for me to understand.
Totally.
And I studied for 5 years straight and just loved it and did every single iteration of what it was to be a meditator with this lineage. So I was like really loose with it. Mm-hmm. And then I was incredibly austere. We call it my spiritual phase.
Yeah.
I was like literally only, I started only wearing like, I wore very particular types of clothes and I said no to everything. Not because I was allergic to it or I couldn't eat it, literally just because everything was a no.
Mm-hmm.
I meditated like a banshee. I was very strict. I did yoga 6 days a week. I was no stimulants passed my lips. Mm-hmm. I slept on the floor, which was a fun memory for Aaron for 4 months.
Yeah. I love that Aaron goes along with everything.
He's just going with the flow. He's like, it's easier to just not fight it. And he's like, also something fun is always happening. Even if the fun bit is just that you're funny and I get to laugh at you. but no, he's incredibly patient. Yeah, I literally slept on a yoga mat on the floor for 4 months.
Love it.
I'd be in bed and cuddling him and then I'd be like, all right, crawl down. Lie on the floor with my hands in this like really weird position across my chest and be like, good night.
Mommy.
And then fall asleep. But what I learned, I went through in my year of austerity, we call it. I also learned that I was actually quite mean and bitchy and judgmental about everyone that wasn't living the way I was living.
Totally.
And the whole reason I was doing this austerity program that I'd written for myself was to become more compassionate and more what I would put in inverted commas, like spiritual and more grateful. And instead, what I was doing was looking at everyone around me being like, you should be doing what I'm doing.
Yeah,
like
completely.
I found the magic answer. And that's bullshit.
Yeah.
So thank God I came out of the austerity phase and I stopped meditating for 3 months. And it was another deliberate experiment. I thought, I really need to see if this thing that I'm doing is actually granting me all the things that I think it is, mm-hmm. or if it's just made up in my head. We have an ongoing joke. Aaron says, if you'd like to get divorced for a second time, let's do that little experiment again.
Yeah.
Because the wheels fell off and like slowly, but then dramatically.
Yeah.
My anxiety came back, my stress. I could feel it in my nervous system. You know, my asthma was out of control. Mm-hmm. I was angry mm-hmm. and I was short-tempered and volatile and just negative. I just noticed that my mindset kept like leaning into negativity. And so I ran the 3 months and then went back to meditating. And I still remember the first meditation that I did. And I was like, oh, I can actually breathe out. And then it only took about a week or two. And I felt like I was back to the level that I wanted to be at.
Yeah.
And then I decided I was going to become a teacher.
Tell us what's actually happening because you've kind of created from Vedic switched into your own integrated meditation that you teach. But tell us what's actually happening there and going on, like how you sort of explained it when I was learning from you for the person who is like, what is Vedic meditation and what is it actually doing?
So it's a mantra-based technique that allows the mind to transcend. Essentially. So it allows the mind's got all these different layers to it. And in the deeper layers, there's a thoughtless state. And a lot of the time we try to force it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, banish the thoughts, let the thoughts go. And it's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
They're on a constant loop. One of the fun things that happen when students learn to meditate with this technique is they start to go, what is that voice in my head?
Or like, the many, which is so crazy.
And that's you. That's the voice that you live through.
All
that you think is you.
Yeah.
And all those thoughts you think are yours when it's actually just on this continual loop. So it allows you to move past that loop, move past that endless, like, you know, leapfrogging around, but in a really gentle and effortless way. I describe the mantras as like little anchors.
Mm-hmm.
The mantras aren't necessarily these like incredible, sacred, holy things. Sometimes I hear people talking about these, like they're so special and they're not. They're just vibrations and they're sounds, but there is something special about them
mm-hmm.
in the way that they work with people.
Mm.
There's a vibrational quality that just seems to work above and beyond anything I've ever worked with. And I've tried so much.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode that I hope you're finding very expanding to tell you about a special offer that you won't find anywhere else but here. So with the code JOURNEY, that's capital JOURNEY, simply put that in order to receive your first month off free for the pathway or 10% off any of the a la carte. And once you're in the pathway, there's a suggestion of exactly what you should follow, starting with a formula and magnetism workshop, moving into reparent and shadow, and then you'll move through if you're calling in a career opulence, you'll move through partnership if you're calling that in. And of course, everybody should be doing the daily reprogramming exercise. The beautiful thing about the pathway as well is that you will have access to the Facebook group, which is the like-minded community you've probably been manifesting. And it gives you access to all of the unblock villages that are meeting up around the world. So you'll be able to find one in hopefully your neighborhood. And you get full access to my class, which is twice a month called Supported, where you can write in any question you're having about your manifestation process or manifestation in order to have me answer your question. Enjoy the rest of this episode. I'll get into sort of where I'm stuck at, actually, will be really interesting to hear your perspective. But I have tried things like relax. It does kind of take me into that same state, but they are very special.
Well, it's taking you out of fight flight.
Yeah.
So there's the fight flight, rest and digest. And when you're in a fight flight state, then the mind and body are connected into that state. And when you can take one or the other out of fight flight into rest and digest, mm-hmm. then the other will follow.
Mm-hmm.
So the mind and body are in like the connection we underestimate.
Oh yeah.
And as soon as one drops into that out of fight flight, then the body will follow. And that's where guided meditation sit a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you're out of the state that you might be in a lot of the time and it feels lovely. And then there's another state
mm-hmm.
and that's the transcendent state. And that's what we access when we're meditating. I think there's a few reasons why students say, oh God, this technique, why does it work above other techniques? Because I teach people straight off the bat. They've mm-hmm. never meditated in their life. They come and they learn. I'm slightly jealous. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I wish I'd had that experience. I tried everything first.
Oh, I know.
And then I teach students that are like me that have tried everything.
Same, yeah.
And then they learn and they get frustrated. They're like, why is this so effective? And I think it's due to two things. It does have an effect, but also the time frame. It's like I describe it as instead of sitting for an hour and doing this long walk around the block, you're going to do short sprints in 15 to 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the meditation tends to be, it's compressed. So mm-hmm. the experience is quite dense. Sometimes for better or for worse
yeah,
in
yeah.
feeling it. Sometimes it can be a lot of stress release for a student and
yeah.
they can really feel, have a quite an intense experience. And other times it's really beautiful. And I always say you'll never have the same one twice.
Yeah. No, it's very different every time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Which keeps it interesting, but also you can kind of crave some stability sometimes.
I know. Or you can like crave the high.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that beautiful,
yes.
like, expanded feeling.
Yes.
And I am always saying, and you know, Aaron and I went through this years ago when he was like, oh, I don't think I'll keep meditating. I think I broke it. And I said to him, how do you know? And he's like, well, I just feel like it's doing what it did in the beginning, which
yeah.
is that hedonistic feeling.
Yeah.
And so we ran, asked him all these questions around like his creativity and his clarity and his physical health and who he was in the world and, you know, his confidence. And he was like, oh, okay, well, it's still working. I was
yeah,
like,
yeah,
no, of course. But what we do is we tend to hold the thing that we do accountable. It's like, don't worry about the time when you're meditating. For this technique, because and I really want to express this because people go, oh, meditation's meditation. It's not. There's so many different techniques. So I'm literally referencing this one. So if someone's listening and they do a Buddhist practice and then they start melting down, like, oh, hang on a minute. Does that mean that's not for that practice?
Mm-hmm.
But for this practice, you only meditate because of how you feel in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's an investment in time. It's not. And I try to get students to reframe this all the time. Like, think about you meditate for 20 minutes twice a day. It's 3% of your day.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason you do that 3%, you're not going to feel your personal best in that 3%, mm-hmm. but you're going to feel it in the other 97.
It's absolutely true.
Yeah.
You know, when I went to get my second mantra, because unfortunately you were in Australia. So I went to Johnny in New York and
yeah.
he said, has anything gotten worse since you started meditating? And I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't even looked at that. God, no, everything's gotten so much better.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's been countless people on this podcast that have said, because of TM or Vedic, my whole life changed. Everything started to work out and all that stuff. So I love that you say that. It is truly an investment for the 97%
yeah.
of your life. Absolutely.
And with integrated meditation, because we moved the needle on it a little bit.
Yeah.
One was I no longer wanted to be bound by the patriarchal system that Vedic falls within, but also very, too much for me. For some people, they love it. It's just not, it just became non-sustainable for what I wanted to do. And yeah. that expansion beyond that. Also, Vedic meditation comes from a body of knowledge called the Veda. And that is, the Vedanta, the underpinning of it is that there's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I became increasingly disillusioned with any system that says there is only one thing, but really our thing is the best and don't do those things
or
over
gurified.
There.
I'm over the guru
yeah.
of anything.
Of anything, yeah.
yeah.
And I study Buddhism. I love Taoism. I study Zen. I study a lot of Eastern practices.
Also beautiful.
Yeah, and karate. And I'm about to dive now into Aikido and I study Qigong and Tai Chi. And I just decided that I got to a point where the bind of Vedic meditation just unto itself became a little too tight for
mm-hmm.
me and I want to expand beyond it. And so we call it integrated because we do integrate other philosophies and other practices and other techniques into the teachings. And we also give students a lot more outside of just the course that they've sat. So with an ongoing education
oh, yeah.
program.
Like I'm allowed to sit in on you know, once when you're in LA and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Absolutely.
It's incredible.
Yeah, and all different modules. I say to students that and not everyone's there. Some people will meditate once a day. They'll do their 15 minutes, 20 minutes. They'll love it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Aaron. Aaron only meditates once a day. Mm-hmm.
I do often as well when I can't fit in the second.
Yeah. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that
either. But when life gets shitty, I right away bring in the two. Yeah. I'm like, I don't fuck around. Right now I'm doing the two because I'm just, my whole nervous system is too shocked right now.
Yeah. It's basically the body will get so afraid and it'll start to send distress signals to the mind. Mm. And then you start to, you know, intuitively like, yeah. I call it the cracks start to show. But then also some do too. And some of our students, and these are the ones that really fly, what we recommend is also doing 15 minutes of knowledge every day.
Mm.
So 15 minutes of saturating. So your mind is now being saturated in a state that's not, it's completely expansive. Mm-hmm. It's the field of creative intelligence. It's connected to one thing.
Well, and you send out this daily as well.
Yeah. So that's part of the program for integrated meditation, is to keep people inspired and just keeping them a little bit recentered. And that goes for me too.
Mm-hmm.
I always say shoulder to shoulder with students.
There's same. No, that's how I am in manifestation. I'm right there with you doing all of the work.
Completely. As opposed to a hierarchical, I'm up here and you're down there.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the things that's been most transformational for me was just every day finding 15 minutes. It doesn't have to be a whole 15 minutes, but it's 1% of your day.
Yeah.
So if you can find, you know, 5 minutes here and 10 minutes there. And I always stack it up against, okay, what am I looking at on my phone versus what could I be reading that's nourishing me?
Yeah.
Or doing a dre or doing it like this. And so the study component and I find that so incredibly important.
Mm-hmm. It anchors you, honestly, I feel, back into what your intentions are with this practice and life in general.
Well, and well, interestingly as well, the word guru, or pronounced guru, is the remover of shadow.
Mm.
And it means that anything which triggers a response that removes the shadow to reveal the lightness within.
Oh, I love that.
And it got really confused, I think, in the West, because all of a sudden we're like, oh, the guru is the person.
Yes.
And they hold the light. And if I can crawl close enough to them, then maybe they'll shine some light
on me.
That's
the problem.
And so we're really trying to reframe that with the broad place and help students understand that no, any experience which reveals the light that you already have within you, that's already there. It's not, you don't gain it, you don't get it, you don't acquire it.
You were born with it.
Yeah. You're abundant in it, but you just have some shadowy stuff blocking you up.
Totally.
Take that away and then reveal the light. Meditation for me is one of the key that peels back a bit of the shadow. But also, what are the other things that could be that? So we always recommend study, reading. It can be, I mean, I found some of my most, I mean, I've learned more from, we laugh, our little rescue dog, Toofy, who teaches me more.
Who's the cutest dog if you don't follow Jack on Instagram? two things I just want to shout out.
Yeah.
Like, go follow Jack on Instagram at the broad place, because it's just full of Toofy. And then B, what I think is very, very helpful is signing up for your newsletter, because that is what you do send out. If somebody doesn't have the time to go find the reading material or doesn't know where to go look, you do send out different texts daily.
Every day.
You're still doing it daily.
Yeah.
Yeah, where it's literally a little teaching from other people and you added into it, which is so nourishing.
It's just a really lovely way for me is writing it. It's a lovely, lovely way to keep re-soaking and saturating my mind in the teachings of other brilliant teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But also they're just little guideposts. And it's funny, students have these little moments where they, for some reason, I'll feel so inspired to write a particular thing. And it's always the ones that I'm nervous about writing that I would be like, I'm always a bit like, oh, is this too personal or is this too...
The best of it. Most magnetic.
And then that's the one that everyone gets, I get the feedback from. They're like, it's like you wrote this just for me. And that's where I know I'm really channeling it.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily, it's like I'm having an experience. It's enabling me to describe something. That only reason that happened was so I can communicate
100%.
It. And it's just because people needed to hear it.
Yeah.
And it helps also make sure that there's no ownership over that and definitely no ego.
Mm-hmm.
Over, I'm writing special things. It's just like a channel for
totally
lovely pieces of
you.
Information.
Yeah.
And on that channeling, I'm always trying to say to people, you don't need a single person that it comes from. It can come from anywhere and anything. Like
totally.
My dog teaches me so much about being heart open and grateful. And, you know, little kids, I teach little kids and they say the most profound things. I've been watching Netflix, you know, it's some obscure show and then someone will say something that I have to pause it and write it down because it's just so poetic and beautiful. And I think if we can open the aperture on like, where will I find inspiration and draw from? It's everywhere.
Everywhere.
And it's not, it can be nature, it can be a book, it can be study, it can be an online course, it can be a person that you have a coffee with. It's not just that thing.
Like your year. Of austerity.
Yeah. In my year of austerity, it was just a few things.
I think many people can relate to.
Yeah, the bandwidth got too tight.
Mm-hmm.
It's like not enough information could flow through because it was too contracted.
Rigid, yeah.
Yeah, way too rigid.
I have questions for you about my practice, because I think this is helpful for the person curious about, you know, integrated manifestation or who have been practicing. I want to be like, Jack, what's happening when? I think this is a really cool thing to talk about anybody who's interested in signing up and learning and or already practices. What's going on in that moment? Because I've only had the full conscious experience once where I feel connected to absolutely everything. I get little pieces of that. But what I do crave when I talk about the high is because I'm so tired all the time from my endocrine issues, that there's that moment where it's like, oh, I've just had a nap. Okay, cool. I can cut it. Like, I'll take my meditation much longer now, at 45 minutes or so. And I'll have that moment where I'm like, I just felt my whole nervous system's been completely renourished through like all of the different, you know, chemicals in the brain and all of that. What's going on there? Are we getting like a beautiful bath in all of our, what are they called? Endorphins.
Yeah, you're getting a big happy hormone download.
Okay.
Yeah, so the body will release stress-related hormones and that will create a feeling of expansion because you literally have more space. It's like editing, you know, when your iPhone's too full and you're like, oh, I can't take another photo because there's just no space and you have to delete some of the photos. Now you're like, oh, I've got more space. That experience will happen in your nervous system, but also your brain is literally rewiring itself. And I truly, the mind-body is recalibrating together. And I think it's that connection that makes you feel whole and grounded.
Mm.
I don't know if there's any science to back that part up. Some of what I've been doing is so intuitive, but interviewing thousands and thousands and thousands of students who are having the same experience, where it's this sense of people always seem to want to touch their body when they're talking about it as well. Mm-hmm. It's like, I feel so back in my body, like whole again and connected and grounded. And we are so pushed emotionally and mentally now, and we've got so much information coming into us.
It's way too much, yeah.
Oh, Marley said to me recently, she couldn't believe that phones used to be like on the ground, like attached to the wall is what she asked.
Oh, no.
And then she was like, and then she smirked, and she's 12 and a half, and she said to me, she's like, apparently you could only do one thing on them. You could only talk on them.
Yeah, isn't that on the phone. Crazy? And these kids don't even know.
She just had no idea. And she was watching free-to-air TV at her in-laws. And she was so frustrated. I could hear her like frustrated. And I walked in. I said, what are you doing? And she's like, I can't fast forward this bit. And I was like, they're TV commercials? And she was like, well, how do I make them go away? I was like, you can't. It's free-to-air.
Wow.
You know, she'd never seen free-to-air television.
Yeah.
She streams everything. And you know, you think she's 12 and a half, like how quickly that shifted and changed. And
because I remember all of that.
Same.
Yeah.
Remember the extra long cable
with
the phone that you drag
through the house. Yeah, totally.
Until your dad tripped on it. You're like, you're putting some cute boy. You're like, my life is over. And so, you know, our little brains, our little minds, our little nervous systems, they're so unbelievably overwhelmed. And also, let's face it, life's fun and it's exciting and juicy. And I love I love social media. I like being engaged and involved in all sorts of things. And but it takes a toll.
Yeah.
I don't want to go and live in a monastery or an ashram. And I've tried that for little moments in time. And, you know, we all paint idealistic views of like, but if I lived in a monastery or an ashram, it's like, because there's humans there. It's just kind of the same stuff you deal with outside
same
the monastery.
Shit, yeah. Same mirrors are there, yeah.
Jealousy, hierarchy.
All the things,
climbing. And so I think that what happens is we take all that into account and consideration of how overwhelmed we are. We have an experience in amongst all of that that allows us to come back to ourselves, to unwind, to reboot, to recalibrate. And you have this, it's this remarkable, incredible feeling where you go, oh, I'm me again.
Yeah.
Whilst connected to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I love, and students are like, I look at a flower and I feel like I'm connected. I feel like I'm connected to it. I look at nature and I look at other people and I feel like I understand them more. And that's that connection that we should always have.
Yeah, that's consciousness.
Yeah, but we're just blocked from it a lot of the time.
Totally. So. And most things that we interact with are continuing to block us intentionally. I'm a conspiracist.
Yes.
So, yeah.
No, completely.
Yeah.
And so when you say as well, oh, you're doing 45 minutes, if we're under any immense amounts of pressure and stress, we can extend our practice.
Yeah.
I always say to students, if you have any questions, definitely consult your teacher because it can also become like a bit of a hedonistic chase for some people. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, I feel fine. I feel great. But what if I do heaps more meditation?
Oh, yeah,
will that grant me even more experiences?
Yeah.
And sometimes it can have an adverse impact. The body is resting at too deep a states or you can release too much stress. So it's always good to chat to to your teacher, but
and listen to your body. I think too,
definitely listen to your body. And any experience where we go, I'm definitely chasing something we want to let go of, and any experience where we go, oh, I'm bathing in, I'm saturating in, I'm enhancing what's already there. before it.
Cool. And then what's going on with me? Like, I kind of explained this to Johnny, and I'm so Vata. I'm so, like, you can really relate to that, where at some point my mantra not stopped working, kind of like Aaron had, where it made me more Vata, have like bringing it into my practice. When I would say it, it felt like I was pushing in, like Vataing up more. I didn't know what was going on there. And then he gave me my extended mantra, which just made it on steroids. And that's when I was like, I'm just going to start saying, relax.
Yeah.
Instead of my mantra. What was going on with that?
So there could have been a few things. One could have been a need to refine. There's this sometimes, okay, this is the way I describe it to people. We are taught this concept of effortlessness with a lot of Eastern philosophies and practices, but we've never been taught what it means. And effortless is to do very little effort. And there's no other part of our lives in the West where we're taught that. I mean, I'm sure we were raised the same. It's like, put your head down, work your ass off, nose to the grindstone. And effort was gifted to you, like it was the equal sign. And on one side was effort, on the other side was success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And so what happens was we're like, oh, so the harder I try, the more successful I get to be. And we teach this to little kids even still now. We're like, you just need to try harder. Mm-hmm. Are you applying yourself? And so naturally what happens is we come to meditation and we're like, it's an effortless practice. But we're, of course, no one comes to learn this technique and goes, oh, I really wish to part with this much time and money and I hope I'm really terrible at it.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
totally.
Friends, like, I really want to be good. And most people come to it. It's why I love teaching. It's so rewarding. Rewarding because people come in and they're like, lock and load. Like, I am ready to transform my life. I'm ready. I'm thirsting. I'm needing. I know this is
I'm
the moment in time.
In
And it's the moment in time where I'm ready to transform. And so what happens is they try too hard. You know, like you, and it's the one thing I'm constantly trying to teach students is effortlessness is doing the least thing possible.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do when we're practicing with this technique is we're delegating, you know, mind and body, you do what you need. My only job, my only role within this whole sequence that will continue to change every time I sit, so you can see why people get what, is to be as quiet and soft with my mantra as possible and not control it. And so when you first learn, what happens is you kind of go, all right, you get the hand. Remember that story I told with Arlo and the little cloud?
Yeah.
So you get that, and that will start to happen. But then life also, you start to calibrate at different levels. So your body and mind would have been now calibrating at higher frequencies and higher vibrations, and that becomes your new normal. And then you, that from that standpoint, then the rest of life of, you know, trying equals success will just keep coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of students at around the 1 year, 2 year mark, all of a sudden are like, oh God, I don't know what's happening with my practice. And I find, and I always say to them, are you doing, like, are you being soft? Are you being, we run through like a little sequence. And they're like, oh, I forgot about that bit. About the bit where I was supposed to be being really refined and really gentle with my mantra. And
I've tried that.
Actually yelling it at myself.
No, no. I've definitely tried that. But I like what it feels like is, because I think of all of the stuff I do, it's like you're saying my frequency is so high. In general, like it's just creating more Vata. It's like Kundalini. All that stuff just creates more and more and more consciousness and energy and all of that. And I'll even do that. I'll like let my mantra go for a while and then like the softest and I'll elongate it and slow it down. But even the act of doing that still feels like doing. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Or like Vata forcing.
Yeah. So just working with the finer subtleties.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll teach it to you now.
I
can't remember if I taught you falling water.
Oh, no.
But anyone can do this.
Yeah.
So that's, I think anyone listening will love it. And I do it all the time. It's a Zen technique and it will create a softer entry into the meditation. So where we live, we have these beautiful big pelicans. Have you ever seen pelicans?
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Oh, and they're so huge, right? And then when they glide into the water, you're like, you are such a big clunky thing.
Yeah.
So awkward, so misbalanced.
So graceful.
But they land in the water so smoothly.
Yeah.
And for me, this is what this technique is. It's like, how do I transition from one thing to another with grace? And this is where falling water comes in. And so what you can do is, and we'll run the experiment, but you can do it at the beginning of your meditation. And what I find is we sometimes can rush into the practice a little bit and also rush out of the practice. And that can also create this discombobulated kind of like aggravated feeling.
Yeah.
So what you do is you close your eyes and you imagine that really gentle lapping waves like on a low tide are starting at the top of the head. And what they do is they gently cascade down the body. So they'll start down the temple. And they're just washing away any tension.
Mm-hmm.
So any stress, any tension, frustration, you will wash down the eyelids, down the temple, down the jaw, down the chin. little waves cascading down through the chest. And with that, all the tension gets washed away down the back of the head, down the neck. You know, we hold so much tension in and around our ears and through the shoulder blades. We're going to wash little waves all down the shoulders, down to the tips of the fingers, little waves down the chest and the stomach and the hip flexors. Who knew until you start doing yoga? You're like, I have no idea there was so much tension there. All down the back, lower back, and then all down the legs. And these little waves will just continue down to the tips of the feet.
Mm.
It'll take half a minute. Mm-hmm. You do it with your eyes closed. And you'll have this moment, you go, oh, it's like a…
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I'm back to myself.
Do you want to know what I do? And this is actually really funny and not advice probably.
Oh, God, what do you do?
Remember when you used to take painkillers? Let that just start to take over your body and nervous system. I do that at the beginning of meditation. So this is a far more conscious practice. I love
that. Remember when you were doped.
Yeah. Remember when you're all your muscles just, or like I envision like warm honey going down the whole body
beautiful.
And stuff. But I love that. I'm going to try that. That's a really great practice.
I love the water because water is always represented consciousness.
And cleansing. Yeah.
I think it's this beautiful purification and washing away of. I sometimes feel like energetically as I'm going through the day, stuff is sticking to me.
Oh yeah, me too.
You know, and then…
In me.
Yeah, it sort of like latches on and then, you know, I notice that my shoulders get a little bit up and forward and just a defensive body stance. And so this is that beautiful way of going, okay, I'm cleansing all of that away and then gently coming to the mantra. So we always recommend with the practice that you sit for half a minute before coming to the mantra. That's the traditional practice.
I remember that and I love that bit of advice.
But I love doing the falling water.
I think I remember most things that you taught in the beginning because I really reflect back to it. Even today when I only slept, I think, 3 hours last night because I was like Max's energy for his shoot and me adjusting back into being LA and just coming off all this nervous system stuff that I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to do my practice in the morning right when I wake up. Because like Jack says, when you do it, it's like gaining 2 hours more of sleep.
Yeah.
I remember everything I think that you taught us, which was also great and still rings in my ear with my practice. And I love that.
Well, also because you changed beds last night.
Yeah.
Basically what happened, because you were staying at the retreat house when you've come here.
Yeah.
So I learned, there's a really brilliant podcast by a guy called Matthew Walker and Joe Rogan interviews him.
I love Joe Rogan.
He's hilarious.
I'm obsessed with his, he just brings on some of the coolest guests.
The coolest people. Yeah. So he does this and I'm obsessed with sleep. So I've tried polyphasic, biphasic sleeping. I've done all sorts of sleeping. I did the Uberman model where you awake for 4 hours and you sleep for 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And you do that continuously in 24-hour stretches ongoing. Wouldn't recommend it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sounds insane.
It's insanity.
Wow.
But the one I find really interesting is that Matthew said on this podcast is that as soon as you transition from one bed to another, half your brain will stay awake all night.
No way.
Because it perceives threat.
Ah,
and so it made perfect sense to me. I was like, why do I sleep? Because we travel 4 months of the year.
Yeah.
Like, constantly having
this is
terrible,
always my case.
Yeah, terrible night sleeps. And it's basically once half your brain is on, your nervous system is slightly, even though you're sleeping in state of fight flight. And so you have that really discombobulated. You might have wild dreams because you're not getting enough REM. All these kind of things happen. So
this makes so much sense for me because every time I transition anywhere, I do that. I'm always like, why is that so tough? Why can't I have a good night's sleep?
So do 2 half-hour meditations.
And I did this morning. Yeah. It helped me so much already. And then I'll do right after this before I run to go be on a podcast, I'll do a really quick deep imagining on the biomat and both of them will knock out all of the fatigue.
Mm.
Well, like that it won't in my body, but that it holds me up in the day.
No, definitely. Yeah. And I think that more and more the practices and the things that we can use to help us get through the day are just critical.
Oh yeah. Especially in this, overstimulated world today.
Definitely. And also if we truly want to be of service, then we need to take care of ourselves first.
Have to. Yeah. What is your biggest shadow aspect you've had to overcome in life?
God, how long do we have?
I know. I always look at Lila. She's telling you. I'm always like, Lila, how much time do we have left? Good.
Okay. My biggest shadow aspect has been probably people pleasing, I'm going to go with, because of how, like the situation when I was little and also being gifted with a healthy, able body and a creative mind. And there was a level of, on one hand, there was like, oh, I was really grateful for that. On the other hand, it was like, well, you better make the most of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, God, look at the gift that you have. And so I found that either trying to impress people or please them was always really, really challenging. And with that came an inability to say no and saying yes. So that's been a full relearning of learning what to say no to so that I know what to say yes to.
Awesome.
Yeah. We have a philosophy that we work to called high grade living, which is how to live our high grade selves. And it's very much around in order to the high grade, like the same that the light's already there, the high grade's already there, but it's usually muddled up with a lot of the low grade. And so you've got to let go of the low grade in order to live at that high vibration. And it's a letting go of the low grade. So like I was describing that the light's already there, it's just blocked up with some shadow. It's the same philosophy. Mm-hmm. And that we can have this higher frequency and higher vibration, but we have to let go of the low grade. Rather than also this idea of like, I've got to chase, and particularly with self-development. And you know, the Broad Place is a school for education and self-development. And I found that within that sort of area, there's this sometimes frenzied chasing of like acquisition strategy as opposed to also allowing to release and let go of that, which isn't serving us. So for me, saying no was a huge part of that because it felt like a negative.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to say no. Yeah. Whereas I don't want to say no, I want to say yes. And then, but you have to do both.
Mm-hmm.
And
you
working,
do.
Yeah. Working that out has been incredibly challenging. Also, I used to pedestal people as part of that. Like it was like, oh, I need someone to please. I'll put that person on a pedestal. And particularly, I've worked in studied in lots of different lineages and they're fraught.
Oh,
this
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. That's the whole guru thing. I love your definition of guru today. It's so enlightening compared to what's being, projected and perceived.
It just opens the aperture on what it might look like. Yeah. And I would, if people could just understand that the whole of, like the universe isn't saying it's one person, one thing, one stream of knowledge. It's saying it's everything.
Mm-hmm.
So use everything as a medium rather than just that thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And spiritual bypassing, I think, is a big
huge one.
And one that I was engaged in for a long time. Yeah. And it's super, super gray. And I think anyone working with self-development or going, oh, I want to be the best version of myself, all of a sudden can get caught in the fray of, oh, well, I don't want to be negative.
Yeah, totally.
But also that you need to be truthful too.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be really hard. It's like, oh, if I speak truth about something or someone or then in a But because their actions are negative, but if I speak about it, then I am being negative. I guess I better not do that.
Oh, there's so much of all of this. It's such a mess.
It's a mess. Yeah. So that has been I think moving into spiritual circles and self-development just triggered all my all my stuff when I was small. So it's been a super interesting process working through it.
Good job. Oh, I'm so happy. And everything you said is totally in alignment with manifestation. You know, it's everything I believe. And I am so happy to hear you reiterate it coming from a different, you know, tool set, essentially very similar, but different. And it's kind of what I think is the way, not the way, the only way, but I think it's sort of what the consciousness is shifting into is that we do have to address our things. We do have to make choices and be very selective in curating our life if we want to be in a certain frequency with it or whatever the word might be for somebody, high grade living. And a big part of that is learning boundaries and facing all of our shadow and, you know, our blocks and all of that good stuff. So it's completely exactly what I believe as well.
And also knowing the way the brain works, just that you have to reiterate, if it feels right, then you go, oh, that's true. You're recognizing it. So that's a recognition.
I love that.
No one's introducing you to anything you don't already know. It's literally when you go, oh, that feels right.
Mm-hmm.
That's because for you, where you're at through your experiences, that was meant for you. You already know
Absolutely.
It. So recognize it as truth
and
then
reinforces.
Run with it.
Yeah.
And you've got to do it over and over and over.
Yeah.
And I think I personally had lost my ability for a while to trust that if that made me feel low vibrational, I would just then use my intellect to justify why, as opposed to going, oh, maybe that's just not right for me.
Yeah, period. And that's okay.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
That was a huge, long, arduous, and I still have to check in with
everybody.
That.
Me all the time. All the time. I like just move into new levels of it where I'm like tested with everything new that's like, you sure? You sure? You're going to, you know, and that's how it feels. It's a never ending evolution for me always.
And particularly, I mean, I used to be really competitive at school, like in sports. I was really good at sports and like winning that blue ribbon was a big deal because it meant you'd won that race or you'd done well in that thing. And I would train for it. This work is so hard, you know, because there's you sometimes get that fatigue of like, fucking how many layers are there?
I feel like it's just ongoing.
Yeah, completely. Right? And then finding the enthusiasm and the grace and the trust within that intellect, because then I intellectualize as well. It's like, well, you know, sometimes my intellect will go, well, where, when will it end? Mm-hmm. And it's the joy in, I hope
the
it never
journey.
Does.
Yeah, you know, like, I agree.
And I think that's the most dangerous place because the ego says, let's just use this like steps or a ladder. Mm. And once we're at a certain step or on this hierarchy in the ladder, then we'll be fine and we'll be immune to the being human.
Yeah.
And it doesn't exist like that. And that's where I also think the guru thing became dangerous.
Totally.
Because it's like, well, that person's reached a high state and they've plateaued or stopped. So let's just end it there.
What I find it so funny is like once we reach a high state somewhere, it just means that there's a fucking low state somewhere else that we have to readjust, you know? And I think I really believe nobody. And that's the beauty of polarity. There should always be polarity, you know, for the balance. Everybody has all the things going on and all, you know, that's why, again, yeah, I don't subscribe to the guru thing.
Well, in the philosophy of Zen as well, which is such a beautiful, beautiful, I mean,
so humble.
It's so humble. The challenge is if you have to just, with Zen, it's like, if you can talk about it or describe it, it's not Zen.
Yeah.
Which is really, the same goes with the Tao. If you can use words to describe the Tao, then it's not Tao.
Wow.
Which gets super esoteric. But yeah. The philosophy, if I was to do some underpinnings on Zen, it's that there's for everything, I see it like a magnet, there's a plus and there's a minus. Mm-hmm. And rather than just focusing on one, you actually need to reconcile that there is absolutely a polar opposite
absolutely.
To that and understand it and embrace it. It's really easy to get one-minded mm-hmm. or single-minded. Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, it's just this and I'll ignore that. It's like, well, yeah. No, reconcile it. It's there. I think that's when you talk about the shadow work. It's bringing them both up as opposed to just ignoring one or shielding ourselves
absolutely.
From one.
Absolutely. Even in manifestation too, I think people who are in the pursuit of are always wanting the good thing, all the things to work out. That, you know, there's like an in pursuit of chasing the carrot or the happiness or the great life. And it's like, just as Aaron felt, once you get it, then you have the postpartum and you have, you know, and everybody, as you said, is different and wired differently to wanting different things. But there's never going to be a moment, I believe, that everything's figured out, that everything's in place. Because I do believe the human experience is to continue to feel that polarity at all times and to accept the negative, quote unquote, as much as you do the positive. Is so that's where all the juice lies. That's where the balance is. That's what true magnetic energy is that beauty in between both and being able to feel in your worth and harness both is so special.
And so far, I mean, we would never sit there and watch a movie where it's like, and then it was beautiful and it was amazing and then some more lovely things happened mm-hmm. and then it was great.
Yeah.
I'd be like, fuck that, I'm not watching that.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So boring. Yeah. Whereas I can also find myself sometimes being like, why is everything so up and down? Mm-hmm. There's like good things and there's terrible. I mean, some of the worst moments of my life, single mom, divorced, bankrupt, at the age of 29, like life goals.
Yeah.
ticking those boxes.
Yeah.
But that also taught me everything. It taught me so much. It paved the way for all my growth there going.
Yeah.
But then I forget it. And then, of course, you have like a really bad day where everything seems to be going quote unquote wrong.
Yeah.
And you're like, why, Nay?
Yeah, why? What's happened? What did I do?
No, and then also it's so easy to start questioning, well, is the work I'm doing, is the meditation I'm doing, I'm doing all these things. Why aren't they giving me the things I want?
Yes.
And we need to reframe that, all that language, which is I'm being within all these things. And then… And
also, I have the opportunity to face the things I'm supposed to be addressing or looking at.
Oh, completely.
And,
and otherwise, we're being like little kids with the universe.
Totally.
You know, I feel like the universe is parenting sometimes, which is it's a dualistic view, but it's just a view that I can like latch onto.
That's what I believe. Yes, we're being tested in things.
Well, because so there's the view that in Vedanta is that we're all one thing. So when we say the universe is teaching me, what we're saying is I am the universe or I am teaching myself.
I love that.
Which is beautiful. But sometimes on a day where I'm just like, you know, like
white,
where I'm white knuckling it. I'm like, ugh. So I like to go back to like, it's more like a sort of fairy tale paradigm of like, there's the teacher and there's the student or there's the parent and there's the child. And I think that if we look at the universe as this beautiful parent, and it is trying to nudge us through. Like, there's no way I know Molly will have zero resilience and zero creativity if everything just goes perfectly for her. Like, that's nonsense. But then, so I have to remember that is like the universe is, and how am I responding in those moments where it doesn't go well? Like, if the universe is like, oh, give me a break.
Yeah,
falling apart over nothing, like white knuckling. On a day where it's not that bad. And then it's like, well, really? You clearly don't have any resilience. So let me show you really what that could look like.
Yeah, let's go there.
Yeah. So I think that there's this beautiful interplay of all these lovely experiences and all those shitty experiences and rebranding them and reframing them so that they don't seem like good, bad.
Yeah.
And I try to say to students all
the
time.
Which is just ego.
Yeah. Well, it's like, or we view it as like, maybe bad for us because of it in a moment in time we didn't want it.
Yeah.
And then I always remind myself like I'm one little person amongst 7 billion.
Oh,
I don't know what the hell's going on.
Totally.
Yeah.
I love that. Tell us about Enhance.
Oh, Enhance is our... So one of the challenges with integrated meditation or anything from the lineage is that it needs to be taught in person with a teacher in the room. And there's something I think that's absolutely brilliant. And it's a really transformational experience. But then that's not also available to everyone because mm-hmm. literally there's just not that many teachers and not that many teachers in the room, particularly for me. And so what we did was we created Enhance, which is our online signature journey. And for me, it was all the things that I've wanted in regards to education and meditation coming together mm-hmm. in a really enriched way. So we focused on the three areas that I think there's three pillars. And particularly because I think we all tend to lean to one. So creativity, we go, oh yeah, that's for me. Or consciousness or clarity. But when we have all three functioning and unlocking at the same time, then that's when we get to really, really expand. Mm-hmm. And so there's a guided meditation for each, and there's an exercise and tools and techniques, and you do all of them per module. Mm-hmm. So it's a module in each. But really, it's sort of a choose your own adventure. So the idea being that on a moment in time, in a day, someone will go, you know what I need? I just need this. Mm-hmm. That might be because if they've never meditated before and they use the whole experience and program as their platform, but also it might be for our students that already exist that have got their daily Vedic and integrated meditation practice and they go, I need more today.
We call it
a booster. Yeah, more support.
And I logged in last night. Yeah, I totally did and did one of the meditations. It's fantastic. And I think they're so digestible. It's quick, which is amazing. I think that's what everybody's looking for. And that's exactly what it felt like was support.
Yeah. And it's 15 minutes. So the techniques and the tools, everything should take around 15 minutes and you can just pick up one. And you go, okay, I've got 1% of my day today and I'll dive into this. So it might be the meditation or it might be the tools, it might be a technique. It might be something that's just there to give you, it might be sometimes it might be a Band-Aid and there's nothing wrong with that. Like whatever you need to get through the day is fine. Yeah. And then there's those other days where it's really rich and you already feel expanded and you're like, I'm going to build on this.
Yeah, I want to go deeper.
Yeah, I've already got the big platform there for myself. So I'm just going to harness and plant more seeds in the soil.
And where can we find it?
Oh, on our site. So we've got thebroadplace.com.au. We have a beautiful little online platform called The Classroom, which we built, which is where all our online education happens. So you can go straight into The Classroom and then you can see it all on there.
Yeah, and anybody who's all over the place and doesn't have access, it's just, I think there's so many resources on your site. It's incredible. I think go check it out in general. Sign up for the newsletter. And where are you teaching coming up the next 6 months?
So the next 6 months, The Broad Place will be teaching all throughout Australia and New Zealand.
Okay. Okay, great.
So that's all the major cities. And then I'll be teaching in London and there's back here in LA and New York over the next 6 months. And then also a few little things that might be popping up. Amsterdam, great. Berlin, Paris. So.
And what months-ish for the people listening? Because we have listeners in all of those places. Where can we sort? I know we can find it on the site, obviously,
absolutely.
To get the exact. But
so
frame.
For anyone that's ever confused about anything, they can just punch in their city name. So they thebroadplace.com.au/ and Los Angeles. And we'll have all the dates listed.
Excellent.
Same goes for New York, for Sydney, for Melbourne, for Brisbane, for Byron, for Auckland, for Hong Kong. And then we're going to keep adding the cities or they just go to the calendar as well on our website. Everything's listed on there. But we start teaching in London from May and we are looking in 2019 and we're looking to come back here in LA in June.
Oh, that's what I thought. Great.
Yeah.
Okay,
and then maybe September, October.
Oh, good. And we'll be able to actually hang out then.
Definitely.
Because this time we didn't get to. That's so exciting. And I know there's a big LA crowd that'd probably be pretty interested in that. So that's great in the summer. Yay. And then what about any retreats? Are those coming up?
So we're doing a retreat in Byron in about a week or two in Byron Bay. It's our last of the year in Australia.
Oh, okay.
We've been doing one every year or two in India, but we're just going to press pause on it for a little while. India is so remarkable. I've been 7 times in the last 5 years.
Oh my gosh. Which is also exhausting too.
It is exhausting. Yeah. It's the best and worst of experiences going to India. And so I needed to just press pause on it for a little while. But there's lots of talk now about doing something interesting, either in the UK.
Ooh.
Yeah, we've had a few. Scotland's one reached out. I was like,
yay, I have to go to that.
Yeah, or in France as well.
Great,
so,
I'll be there.
Yeah, I think there's...
Kelly, we're going together.
Yeah, no, Kelly's
listening.
Already in.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Mm. And then anything else we should look out for on the site or coming up or anything to know about?
We launch, it's a while away, but in March 2020, we're launching High Grade Living, which is our big published book.
Yes.
Which will be super exciting.
Great.
But up until then, we've got more courses coming on ritual and routine. Just we're expanding more into the tools that we use that we know help ground and ground and expand are the two things that I think are so beautiful. It's like, I want to feel rooted, mm-hmm. but I also want to feel like an oak tree, mm-hmm. Which is actually what a healer that we work with said to Aaron. She was like, I want you to work with constantly looking at what are the roots doing underground and how light are the leaves that are dancing in the sunlight and the breeze, and that structure of having both. And it was such a beautiful, for me, it was like the perfect visual on, oh, that's what I've been trying to describe. It's like, how do I ground and expand at the same time?
I love that.
Yeah, because it can become sometimes too heady and too expanded, yeah. or you can become too rooted and stuck. So it's that lovely.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, play between the two.
And it reminds me of my ranch. We have those exact oak trees in the sun doing that. So beautiful.
Yeah, amazing.
Thank you for coming, Jack. Everybody who always asks, you know, Lacey, where did you learn Vedic meditation? Go to the Broad Place, because that's where I learned. And she's phenomenal. And you'll love her and get a lot out of this course.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you.